Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Ashley Cowan Murphy. Will be telling us a little bit about her experiences with disability swimming. So tell me a little bit about your experiences with disability swimming. So can you tell me a little bit about your disability story and some of the places it's led you?
Well, what happened to me was when I was 15 months old, I contracted meningitis. Which, at the time, I guess back in the 80s, there wasn't really much acknowledgement on what meningitis was. So, trying to figure out what I had had at the time, gangrene had set in, and at that point, there was no saving up. Okay. Sorry. So, as I was saying, I had caught meningitis, which led to me having to become a four-limb amputee. Being a four-limb amputee, being disabled in general, and I'm not just going to say just a four-limb amputee, but having a disability in general was a tough thing to cope with. Why wasn't I like the other kids? Why couldn't I do things like the other kids? Why are the other kids staring at me?
I didn't say anything there.
Oh. So, needless to say, as I got older, I started trying to do things just like the other kids would do. The only thing that I found that I was able to, besides, like, you know, I've done figure skating, I've done everything, but I excelled at swimming. When I was in the pool, it didn't feel like there was an able-bodied or a disabled person. It was just, we were swimming.
So, did you use any modified equipment in terms of things like the ice skating or the swimming?
For figure skating, I wore artificial legs, which is what I would wear on my day-to-day basis anyways. So there was nothing special about it. It was just the fact of I had a set of legs for skating and a set of legs for everyday walking. They were exact same. It was just I didn't have, instead of, you know, one who has to take their skates off, I had to take my legs off.
So, in terms of what you mentioned about growing up with disability, did you find that the education system did a lot to prepare the other children for interacting with someone with a disability? Is there a lot of understanding built into classroom situation?
No. No, not, at least not when I started school, maybe near towards the end when education systems and things like that were starting to change, like around my grade 8 year, which would have been about 2000-ish area, I find is when it started to change a little bit, and instead of it being the hush hush secret, we don't say anything, we don't do nothing, don't stare, don't ask questions, it was, well, tell us more about it. If you have questions, ask her about it.
So, Vicky Keith had mentioned you did something rather remarkable in terms of swimming. Take me through a little of that.
Oh, Vicky. I absolutely love her. I did swim across Lake Erie back in 2001. It was one of my major goals I had in regards to my whole swimming career with Vicky. I remember how I wanted to get started into swimming was I was watching TV, and I believe it was Vicky's double crossing of Lake Ontario she was doing. And I stood up, and I remember looking right at my mom, and I said, I'm going to do that. My mom looked at me, and she's like, Ashley, I'm sorry, but you're never going to do that. I was like, well, I'll prove you wrong. So that pretty much was my motivation. And when I finally got in contact with Vicky, my mom got me in contact with Bridie Village and Vicky, and I started swimming and training with her, and I had told her that this was one of my long-term, like, this was eventually my goal. She's like, well, let's see what we can do. And then finally, she knew before I knew that it was time to do it.
So, in the sense of being told what you couldn't do, how did you get beyond those myths and the disbelief that you'd be able to accomplish this?
In all honesty, it's because I'm stubborn, and because if you tell me I can't do something, I'm going to go try and do it, or at least do it to prove you wrong.
It's actually a great motivational technique there. But
I don't like, so just because I have a disability, I don't like somebody assuming or, you know, thinking, oh, well, you can't do that just because you have a disability. Well, no, I may do it differently than what you do, but I'm still accomplishing the same outcome.
So, in terms of actually the swimming itself, are there specialized prosthetic limbs or anything more flexible available for that?
For me personally, I did not use anything, nor did I look into anything. I'm sure that there is now, I'm sure there's lots of other things out there, different devices to help and techniques to do. But for me personally, I can't speak for every person. Me personally, I didn't need anything. I just needed to work different muscles in my body than what an able-bodied person would have had to work at doing the same stroke.
So, what message would you send to all those out there who might be questioning their own capabilities? As someone who's achieved a lot, I'm sure you have some great insights there.
Why are you questioning it? Don't question it. You're very capable of doing anything you set your mind to. It's a mind over matter. If you don't mind, it don't matter, and your mind is the most powerful thing that will play against you. You train your mind to say, I can do this, nothing's impossible, I'm going to do this, you can't tell me I can't. You can accomplish anything.
So, what was it like when you completed the swim and you would come out of the water and you just, you completed it? What was the sensation like for you?
I went on a roller coaster of emotions. I remember the last, I want to say mile or so. Vicky probably has a better idea just because she knows the whole length of it. But I think the last mile or so, I wanted to give up. I couldn't do it anymore. I was crying. I was done. I was so convinced people were lying to me that the end was in sight. But as soon as I heard that crowd, I was like, okay, they're not lying to me. And I just beelined it. I touched the shore. I crawled out of the water. And it was, I did it. Oh my God, I actually did it. And then it was, I'm hungry. And then it was, I'm tired.
Not surprising in any way.
And then it was, oh my god, I really did just do that.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Oh yeah, no problem.
In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Jules Smith from CCD. So tell me a little bit about your work with CCD.
Sure. So I've just been hired in this particular position, and the title is Communication and Government Relations Coordinator. But I also was chair of the Council of Canadians for 4 years, and prior to that, I was a council member 2 different times. So my work tends to focus on human rights and accessibility at federal and also international levels when I'm representing CCD. However, I also live in British Columbia, so I do also a lot of human rights work here in British Columbia.
So what are some of the key issues concerning human rights and accessibility?
Well, I mean, right now there's a lot of issues around COVID-19 that we're prioritizing, including triage protocols that privilege able-bodied individuals over disabled folks. You know, numbers in hospitals get too high, access to money to pay for PPE and extra, you know, all the extra costs of COVID that are going on, access to vaccines for people with disabilities. This morning, I actually did 13 interviews across the country with CBC talking about that particular issue. But more generally, of course, we have a lot. The things that I focus on are housing, transportation, the right to vote and accessible voting, also CPPD and the disability tax credit are a concern. And personally, I'm a PhD candidate, and my research has focused on the experiences of disabled mothers in Canada from a human rights perspective.
So, since you brought up the point of accessible voting, I think I'll ask about that. In terms of having something like a vision disorder, there aren't always available accessible facilities. You encountered this as a problem in any of your work?
Yeah, actually, it's been, I sit on the Accessibility Committee with Elections Canada, and it's an ongoing conversation. I'm not sure if you're aware, but in BC, we actually have an option. If you're blind, there's you can phone in. And there's a two-level conversation. So the first, you talk to somebody and they verify who you are with your ID and everything. And then they transfer you to somebody else who does not have the verification of who, they don't know who you are. And you vote that way. And there might be a third level that they confirm back to you that your vote was the correct vote that you wanted. And again, being anonymous. And I believe it's the only province in Canada that has that. But been pushing really hard with Elections Canada to look at, instituting that system.
So I bring that up because I've heard of cases where people with disabilities have actually had to have an attendant go in with them, thus defeating the purpose of an anonymous vote. And there was some outcry about that a few years ago. Now, as to your research into the experiences of mothers of children with disabilities, how does the diagnosis tend to affect the family dynamic?
I want to be clear, I interviewed disabled mothers, not mothers with disabled children.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I'm a disabled mother myself. My kids are grown up now, but that was my focus.
So, in that sense, how does it affect a parent and, say, something like a marriage or other family relationships, generally speaking?
I think typically, you know, disabled people we're in or out of relationships. I think that, I mean, I heard from both single mothers and also mothers who had partners, so it's pretty much similar. Most women had extended family that supported them and were, you know, part of the village raising the children, so I think that was great.
So what are some of the challenges they typically face?
Yeah, that's what I'm writing about right now. So, you know, there are issues right from finding accessible, affordable housing for, you know, living with a disability. There are assumptions in housing often that it's an able-bodied parent with a disabled child instead of having an entire house being accessible. Women found that often, you know, affordable housing or subsidized housing would only have one part of the house being accessible. So that was one issue. Access to transportation was also something that women talked about extensively. It can be problematic if you don't drive yourself or have access to a vehicle. Other areas that were, you know, difficult once your children were born were around, you know, finding an accessible daycare or finding working with schools to be accessible. You talked earlier about, you know, voting when you're blind. Well, also getting your report cards of your child when you're blind is really difficult for moms. Despite all of our technology, for some reason, most schools don't want to send a report card via, you know, a document that's readable.
So, in terms of accessible housing, I'm curious because there are many different definitions of accessible. I assume there are standards concerning things like vision impairments and hearing impairments, as well as physical spacing and mobility.
Yeah, so there's something called universal design, which constructs buildings from the ground that are easily adaptable. So that would include things like not having doorknobs, having, you know, handles that you can push down. So if you have limited mobility, it makes it easier. The ability to stacking bedrooms so that a house could easily convert to having an elevator inside of it is another thing that happens in universal design. Having light fixtures that are at, you know, a particular height that's more accessible, as well as installing things for people who are deaf that instead of a doorbell sound, you have a light that flashes. I mean, there's like so many ways that places can be built ahead of time so that they're accessible and easy to adapt.
So in your own advocacy efforts, what's proven the greatest success that you've experienced?
That's an interesting question. I think, primarily I work to raise awareness and create conversation. And I feel like communities I've lived that I've done that, and that's really important to me. When my children were younger, I did a lot of advocacy around childcare and access to childcare when you're a volunteer. So I'll give you an example. Often when you're on a board or a committee, there's you get reimbursed for if you have parking or travel expenses or hotel or food expenses. So I advocated that boards and committees include a line item for childcare so that people who are parents could engage in volunteerism and have their childcare covered while they were attending meetings.
I thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
If you or someone you know is struggling with mental health or addiction, consider registering to the new REACT program launched by Downtown Windsor Community Collaborative. REACT is a 90-day program committed to understanding your story and supporting your journey to healthy and long-term healing. All sessions are online and completely free, running weekdays from 9 a.m. until noon. Visit reactwindsor.ca and instantly be connected to a safe and supportive community. That's reactwindsor.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from adapted swimmer Ashley Cowan Murphy, and we heard a little bit about CCD from Jules Smith. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Joanne Dorn from CP Alberta. So, tell me a little bit about CP Alberta.
Oh, well, Cerebral Palsy Association in Alberta has been around since 1976, and it was basically formed because of a group of parents got together to say, you know, we want something more for our kids with CP. Over the years, programs and services developed out of that, and we even expanded our reach to service all disabilities, so we are now a pan-disability agency servicing all of Alberta, and our reach is actually in other parts of Canada as well through other initiatives that we are doing. And in addition to us running a nonprofit, we also run a social enterprise as well. We collect used clothing and small household goods, and that helps generate some revenue for us to offset our basic needs that we're not able to get, say, through grants or fundraising initiatives. So it really helps us out a lot.
So in terms of the social enterprise, would this provide something along the lines of meaningful employment for those with disabilities that you service?
I shouldn't say no. At one point in time, we did have a call center where a lot of individuals with disabilities were working in that call center. As, you know, times have changed, we no longer have to call for home pickups as much anymore as we did, say, 5 years ago. So, unfortunately, we don't have a call center anymore, but we are a proud employer of individuals with disabilities in other capacities through our agency.
Can you give me an overview of some of the programs and services that you offer?
Sure. We run a lot of recreational and support programs. So, for example, we run dance programs, yoga, computer abilities, cook abilities, swimming, music therapy programs, parent support groups, adult night out groups. We also have we have social workers on staff in both Edmonton and Calgary that are here to help the mental well-being of all of our clients and their families and help them throughout their journeys along the way. So we have those as well. We also have different programs in the sense we run a government relations program, and that actually also entails a group called the Calgary Ability Network, which we started about 10 years ago now. And that brings together a bunch of agencies and different groups throughout the city to address certain issues, i.e. transportation, housing, newcomers, just for an example there. So we work with a lot of community individuals to ensure that we advocate on behalf of persons with disabilities.
So in terms of the advocacy and working with the government through this network of agencies, what are some of the key barriers you've addressed?
I think some of the most important things that we're doing is to ensure that individuals with disabilities are front and center and that they're not forgotten about or put on the back burner. Working with the accessibility legislation, making sure that persons with disabilities have the right, just like everybody else. Those are some of the common things that, you know, we've been constantly working for over the years to ensure a seamless, barrier-free environment. We've come a long way, but I think we still have a few more challenges to overcome. But we are getting there, and working collaboratively, you know, with government partners and our legislation, MLAs, MPs, changes, we're working towards positive change in Canada for persons with disabilities.
So, in your time with the organization, has there been any individual success story that stands out for you?
I think, you know, just in general, hearing feedback from families, individuals, that they feel that they have a place to go or programs to attend or supports available to them. I think those right off the bat are success stories every day, because there's such a high demand and a need for those things out there that we're able to be there for those supports along the way. Any one of our individuals that we serve, you know, hearing how they've advanced on through different areas of their lives and how we've maybe held or been a part of it in some way, to me, that's a success story right there. Watching our clients grow up from young kids to teenagers to doing other things and seeing how they've progressed in many ways, whether it's physical or cognitive, and seeing their advancements, that's always a great success story. So I think there's so many, you can't really choose just one.
So if you could send any message for the need for equal inclusion of people with disabilities in society, what would you say?
You know, treat everybody like you would like to be treated. Give people the opportunity to participate on a day-to-day basis without limitations and barriers. We all have struggles in our lives on some level, but I think if we could just remove a lot of the discrimination and have some more consideration and inclusion for everybody, whether it's, you know, individuals with disabilities, persons of color, all of the different areas, and just look at a barrier-free inclusivity, I think, you know, it would be a greater future for many.
So you were saying that you just achieved something that your organization is very proud of in relation to the whole COVID situation.
Absolutely. I mean, obviously, you know, COVID set in and we had to think fast on our feet, going from in-house programs to online programs, where we've expanded our reach way beyond the reach we could have had in-house programs before. Also, too, with our collaborations with our Calgary Ability Network and several other community groups here in Calgary, we were able to be a part of establishing a reentry strategy for persons with disabilities. That document now, and I'm more than willing to share with that with you. We are even presenting that to some of our partners in the U.S. as well, because they're so impressed with what we, Calgary, have been able to put together, including those individuals with disabilities as a part of the reentry strategy with COVID when things start to lift a little bit. We want to make sure that they're at, you know, first and foremost at the front of all of this, and that they understand what they need to do in order to re-enter.
That's how it should be. Persons with disability should always be an equal part of the conversation.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Oh, sure.
My friends, the truth is, Ashley's story is the perfect example in disability life. Deciding what she wants to do, sticking to it, and not letting anything define her path for her. The fact is, a person must find that level of commitment, get things done that they want to in this life. People can easily be told, oh, it's impossible, or you'll never achieve this. We can choose to live with that limitation placed upon us, or we can take a chance and explore our own capabilities. We can rise to the occasion, find a way. Will you succeed at everything? No, nobody does. But can you open the door and accomplish more than you realize? Absolutely. It's a question of having the right moment, right encouragement, and the right strength. My advice to us all, look within yourselves. Explore a little before deciding there is no hope. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.